click my mic, mid-jog. I am a doctor. I have an MD. While I slow down to the girl and Maximov, Donnelly has to chime in. Anyone else think it's strange he only reminds us that he's a doctor when he says he's not a doctor? Any other time, he's the one telling us he can't prescribe medicine, can't work in a hospital, can't. I swivel my radio's knob, cutting him off in my ear. I squat down beside the girl. She clutches her ankle, wincing. Maximov is knelt close. Me and him exchange one look in brisk greeting. Hey, sweetie, I say to the girl. What's your name?
Ella.
She winces through her teeth. Maximov says to me, I think it's just a sprain. I tilt my head. And what year did you graduate medical school? What year did you finish that residency? Still better than you. He gives me a middle finger and a few cameras flash. Hashtag HMCC Campaway has been trending on Twitter all day. Maximov even has a link on his profile page to donate to One More Day. I focus on Ella. She came down on her hands, then head. Are you dizzy?
A little.
I slide the first aid bag to Maximov, who's dying to do something. He's such a fixer. Find an ice pack. I inspect her ankle. Reddened skin. Not a lot of swelling. I press a few fingers on the area. Does this hurt? I ask, but she's already shoving my hands away. Then she bemoans like I stabbed her throat. Okay. I've seen my fair share of dramatics. I can discern what's real and what's bullshit. She turns toward Maximov.
I can't.
She tries to produce tears that don't come. You're going to be okay, he assures her. He wraps his arm around her shoulders in a side hug. Then he hands me the soft ice pack. I don't even touch the pack to her ankle before she winces. On a scale of 1 to 10, I ask, what's your pain like?
9.5.
Okay, sure. I felt enough of the area to know the bone's intact. Maximov looks seriously concerned. Maybe we should just be safe and call an ambulance.
No, no, no.
She raises her hands.
Really, it's not that bad. I could walk on it or try to.
I place the ice pack in her hand. Use this for your head. I can wrap your ankle and we can find you crutches if you need them. How about that? She nods vigorously, then bites her lip at Maximov.
Could you stay with me for a bit?
My brows spike. Of course, Maximov says, sincere and offering another side hug. I dig through the bag for a wrap, and then I glance up. In earshot next to a drink station, a group of white guys in their early 20s talk shit about Jane. She's chatting to a few girls further in the forest. Jane Cobalt is disgusting, a guy says. His familiar angular face and aquiline nose sparks my memory. The red-marked sheet of possible threats. He's on it. His name is Tyler. She wants to get banged so badly it's kind of pathetic. I'd fuck her, but I'd have to tie her down first. They laugh. My nose flares, jaw tight. Maximov is busy listening to Ella, but his cheekbones are sharpening. He hears. I glare at them as I search through the first aid bag. The BDSM shit is such a lie, a blonde says. He's also on the sheet. Brad. Anytime she gets shoved in this capture the flag game, she practically has an orgasm. Just watch her. Fuck you. Oscar starts approaching the guys. He clicks his mic. These yellow t-shirt twats need to be watched. I'm gonna keep an eye on them. I turn my head and whisper into my mic so Ella can't hear. Give them a fuck you from me. We're all thinking it, Oscar says. I rip plastic off a wrap and return to the girl. How you feeling, Ella? I ask before I touch her ankle. She shrugs uncertainly. Maximov drops his arm off her shoulders. That was odd for him. I set the wrap down and near him, my hand on his bicep. Maximov? He palms his collar, rubs his throat, struggling to breathe. And I know. He's going into anaphylactic shock. I rapidly dig through the first aid bag while he wheezes, the sound very close to someone being choked to death. His throat is swelling closed. He tries to say my name. You're okay, stay calm. I tell him like I'm at complete ease. No care in the world. Where's your fucking EpiPen? I touch my mic. Get me an EpiPen! It's not in this bag.
Oh my god, Maximov!
Ella almost clutches onto him, but I gently push her back. Maximov grasps the back of my neck, his head hung, his sporadic breaths cut off short. You're okay. He's not okay. I react calmly in any medical crisis, even when I know the person, even when my heart wants to lodge in my throat. I swallow it down, and I have one mind that says, fix this. Help him. Help him. Do not leave him. I can't leave him. In the distance, Quinn sprints urgently toward us with an EpiPen.
He's allergic to fire ants,
Ella yells at me. I know, I cup his jaw. His narrowed eyes are determined to breathe when he can't. He tries to open his mouth for air. If I could give him mine, I would. I would in a fucking second. But his passageway is closing, tongue swelling, his blood pressure is dropping, his heart rate slowing. CPR solves nothing. He needs epinephrine. I should have had an EpiPen on me. It's the first week of December. We both thought there wouldn't be any fire ants. His face reddens. He wheezes, eyes watering. I tighten my grip on his jaw. I'm here. You're okay. Maximoff wears no fear. He's just fighting his body to stay conscious.
He's going to die,
she screams and bursts into tears. No, he's not. I stare right at Maximoff. You're not dying on me, Wolf Scout. I promised you. Maximoff can't breathe anymore. Close to passing out. Quinn drops the EpiPen on my lap. I bite off the cap and stab Maximoff's thigh. I hear the click. A spring-loaded needle pierces through his clothing. And he gasps a lungful of air, like he's breaching the surface of a pool after almost drowning. I hold the pen in place for 10 seconds. He tries to speak. Don't talk, I say and click my mic. Akara, we need to call an ambulance. His vitals need to be checked at the ER, and I need to find where he was bitten. Maximoff doesn't argue, for once. Really? That just concerns me more. 36. Pharaoh Keen. The medics check his vitals on the ambulance before driving off the property, and I find a small, reddened bite on the back of his neck. After they clear him, he jumps off the ambulance and returns to today's schedule, barely missing a thing. Slow down for 1 second. I catch his wrist before he enters the mess hall for lunch. Maximoff stops and checks his watch. They're here for me and my cousins. I can't bail on anyone. No one will fault you if you need to rest, I interject, taking note of his ashen complexion. I feel fine, or at least good enough to eat. He stares deeper into my gaze with the same words he said the minute he could speak. I'm glad you're here. Me too. I almost reach for his hand, but a gaggle of girls and guys pass and snap photos of him. And then a voice in my ear pulls my attention. Akara to security. Maximoff motions with his head to the mess hall. I nod and follow by his side. Among the rows and rows of wooden cafeteria tables, I sit beside Jane at one of the emptiest ones. Only one table away from Maximoff. He has a throng of people squished close. Likewise, Sully's table is swarmed with people who want to hear stories about the Olympics. Akara, Donnelly, and Oscar all surround her protectively. Our earlier comms conversation stays with me. Oscar. How could an ant be on his neck? Akara. He may have been leaning on a tree. Donnelly. Or someone put it there. Quinn. No way. Me. I would have seen it happen. I'm not subscribing to that conspiracy theory. No one collected fire ants just to put them on Maximoff and watch him choke to death. And even if I somehow missed a dipshit who tried to intentionally or unintentionally kill him, the person failed. And they'll lose an arm if they try again. Jane blows on her spoonful of chili.
Another one is coming,
she tells me, and sure enough, a 20-something brunette sits down in front of me. This is the 7th girl that's confronted me just at lunch. During longer events, this happens frequently to the most attractive bodyguards, and let's be honest, Omega is full of sexy fuckers. Eyes start wandering and people start noticing the guys that they can't have, the ones who are quiet in the corner with ripped muscles and a scowl. It's gotten a lot of security laid. I've been hit on by a few men, many more women, and my answer rarely changes. Hell no. The girl waves to Jane like she's on the other side of the room and not right next to me. About 95% of her focus centers on me, and she begins,
My name's Tara. So my tent mate left today, and it's just me tonight. You should stop by, check it out. I'll show you my tattoos.
I'm gay, I say, pausing to bite into a red apple. She blushes.
You could have just told me you're not interested.
I'm not interested, I say, and I'm gay. She quickly stands and zips back to her table. Jane gives me a curious look. What?
You're more popular than me.
If I were that popular, I wouldn't be security. I'd need security. And Tara won't remember my face by tomorrow. Jane says a French word that I assume means true. Then I follow her gaze to Maximoff. He hasn't been able to touch his lunch. I already grabbed him a to-go bag, and every time he goes for his hot sub sandwich, another person approaches to throw their arms around him. Most to say that they're happy he's okay, others to share their story with him. He listens. He's good at that. Some girls and guys cry as they talk, and he puts a consoling hand on their back. He focuses harder. He leans closer, gives them encouragement and praise. Like right now, one girl rubs her watering eyes. No older than 20, she holds her cell phone tight.
It seems silly, but every time you post on Instagram, or if I see you in the news or in a new episode of We Are Callaway comes out, it just makes me happy. You've always been my favorite. I've watched you since I was little, and I feel like we've grown up together in this weird way.
It's not weird, he tells her. Tears fill her eyes. Emotions gather, and where some guys may be uncomfortable, Maximoff reaches out and places a hand on her shoulder. She continues,
I just want you to know that you've helped me through some dark times, and what you do here for all of us, it means something.
Can I give you a hug? He asks her, his eyes reddening. She smiles and wipes her tears.
Yes.
He pulls her into his arms, and she hugs back. She's one of hundreds, but I know Maximoff will remember the moment, her name, everything. These interactions remind me how people find comfort in all kinds of places, with all kinds of people. Jane's expression can only be described as sheer pride.
They love him,
she says fondly.
As they should.
She eats a spoonful of chili. I bite into my red apple. I can't stop thinking about the campgoers and all the shit they've said about Jane, even about Sully. The women in these famous families have a much harder time gaining favor from the public. It makes no sense to me. Think about it. The fans claim to love Maximoff to the ultimate core, yet they still hate Jane. If they loved him at all, they'd realize how much he'd despise anyone who spewed malice towards his best friend. All day, my mind has been blaring, Protect Jane Cobalt. And if anyone asked me at the start if I had an opportunity to sit beside Maximoff or sit next to Jane in a camp mess hall, which would I choose? I'd never believe them if they said Jane. And here I am, keeping her company. Just because I fucking feel like it. They could love you one day too, Jane, I say, turning my apple for another spot to bite. She has her fair share of fans online, but not very many seem to be here.
I don't need their love.
Jane stirs her chili and then meets my gaze. We both overhear those five bastards nearby. They congregate at a table to the left of ours, still dressed in yellow shirts from the Capture the Flag game, still obnoxiously fixated on Jane. Do you see what she's wearing? God, it's ugly. I take a larger, more vexed bite of apple. Jane has on leopard pants, a frilly shirt, and some sort of teal faux fur collar. And who cares what the fuck she's wearing? Jane reaches for her water, never blinking. Isn't her mom a fashion designer? That's just fucking sad, man. I chew roughly and layer on a glare, about in my max, ready to confront some bastards. Oscar's talk to them obviously did shit.
It's all for attention.
Jane never flinches. Maximoff does, overhearing the last part as their voices escalate, his forest greens turn to hot pinpoints. That's it. Fingers to my mic, I tell the security team, don't follow me. I stand up, half-bitten apple in hand, and turn my radio's volume to a soft chatter I can ignore. My feet carry me to the table of 5 20-year-old bastards. I know their names by heart, but honestly, I'm not using them anymore. To me, they're just bastards and dipshits. As soon as I tower over their table, they go absolutely quiet. Their gazes latch onto my plethora of tattoos and my t-shirt that says, Security. Let's talk outside, I tell all of them. We're not doing anything wrong, one tells me. I didn't say you were, I say calmly, biting my apple. I can't raise my voice. I can't raise my fists. I intimidate without inciting chaos. Let's just go outside and have a chat. It won't take long. I nod towards the exit. Just like that, they all agree. For a few minutes, I lecture them about the importance of being kind and considerate. You know, the bare minimum of human decency. They nod a lot. Whether they're really listening to me is yet to be determined. Sure, the blonde bastard tells me. But I think it's shitty for you to pull us aside and single us out. We paid to be here. You're taking up our time that could have been spent sitting 5 feet from Jane Cobalt. He does a poor job of hiding his smile. And his friends burst into grins. I grit down, and off my piercing glare, they immediately stop. Let me make this very fucking clear, I say. She doesn't owe you a thing, not a time, not the air between your body and hers. You paid to be in a raffle for charity. If you choose to overstep, security will throw you the fuck out. But see, I don't want that to happen. I pause while they hang on to my words, and I forge past my despise just to tell them, you guys seem cool. As cool as a fucking idiot. So the last thing I want is for you to miss out on these last couple days. Be respectful. Tone it down. Yeah, 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 we get it, one says. We try to be nicer, whatever. Or whatever. Honestly. Another one nods to me. Thanks, man. No problem. Fuck, I just made friends with these dipshits. As soon as they all leave, soft static pricks my ear. I turn up the radio. Did he hit them? Oscar's voice. Nah, they're walking away, Donnelly replies. Hey, guys, I click my mic. I've made new friends. Nice work, Akara tells me, genuine. You boys taking notes? I ask them. Next time someone should be with you, though, Akara says. That could have been 5-on-1. I could have taken them all. Take that note down, Pharaoh, Donnelly pipes in. I roll my eyes and then watch those five bastards strut down the hill to the lake. I wish I could have just kicked them out of the camp. The publicity nightmare of sending someone home would destroy the purpose of the charity event. So they have to stay.
37. Maximov Hill. Pharaoh unlocks our tent after the bonfire gathering ends. No moon out tonight. Day 2. I point a flashlight at the entrance and watch the way his fingers fiddle with the key and padlock. And the zipper. Try having your bodyguard a few feet from you all day and seeing him in his element, intimidating the hell out of assholes, medically savvy, badass, and smart as fuck. Now try not picturing his cock a million times. Yeah, that's hard. Pun intended. Now try not being able to touch him, to flash fuck-me eyes, to clutch the back of his neck and plunge my tongue against his tongue. I could growl, I'm so pent up. I want him. All day I've wanted him, and I haven't been able to embrace him. I'm not about to jump him like he's my sex toy. He may be exhausted. So as we both crawl into the tent, I try to hang on to other things. Like how this is the last night of the camp away, and there's been no broken bones, not too many tears. Most of them were happy. And no Charlie. It's been pretty damn good, even with the first day ant allergy attack. As far as danger goes, it's been safer than I think the entire security team predicted. After breakfast tomorrow, everyone will start packing up, last goodbyes exchanged, and we'll all go home. I stretch my legs out on my orange sleeping bag, and Pharaoh padlocks the tent from the inside. As much as I love camping, I'm not a fan of these extra precautions. I'm so used to feeling freer in the wilderness, with this many people around and their cell phone cameras. It's practically the antithesis of why I camp. I peel my shirt off my head, the December chill nipping my bare skin. Pharaoh edges back behind me, eyeing me from his peripheral while he slowly removes his earpiece and twists the cord around his radio. He places his holstered gun beneath his camping pillow. I shut off the flashlights. No more shadows dancing along the tent. And we're isolated from campgoers. Private, but not that private. More security is outside. You know, I whisper. I've never fucked in a tent. We haven't done anything yet because of my allergic reaction. My blood pressure has been out of whack, but I'm fine now. His brows rise, and he pulls his black V-neck over his head. Couldn't convince someone to have a one-night stand in a tent? No. My eyes graze the inked dagger on his abs, just barely visible in the darkness. I just didn't like the idea of only a thin sheet of canvas separating me from my bodyguard. While I was fucking. Usually there's at least a wall. Understandable. Pharaoh watches me as I watch his fingers. He unbuttons his pants, unzips, and he kicks them off. His heady gaze sweeps me in a slow burning once-over, and his tight black boxer briefs suction to his muscles, ass, and his long, thick erection. Christ. Blood pumps harder, everywhere. Until I'm one thundering pulse. I grab his shoulder, and he already rolls on top of me. Legs interlacing, our mouth crushing together, I clench his hair between starved fingers. He wrestles with my pants, yanking them off my waist, down my muscular legs. Off me, completely. Yes. Fuck yes. I drop my voice to another whisper. How far did you say the bodyguards were? Some should be standing outside all night. As he lowers to meet my mouth again, he grinds his hard cock against mine. Fuck me. I told them to give you at least 100 yards. Almost a football field. Seriously, I whisper, my excitement and desire pooling hotter. My right hand ascends his carved muscles, and I thumb the barbell on his nipple. His lips quirk. Yeah, but I didn't do it so he could fuck. He rests his forearms on either side of my shoulders, and I lie beneath his weight that scorches me head to toe. I did it so you could sleep. I lick my stinging lips, seeing that sleep is not on the agenda right now. Pharaoh clutches my jaw, his mouth teasingly close as he breathes. Try not to make a sound. Fuck me. I swallow a groan, and as my cock begs for pressure, he runs his hand down my abs and lower. He grips my length, then balls. Fuck, I breathe, waist arching up into him. Fuck me, man. I usually flip us at this point, but the weight of his build on me feels fucking good. I yank off his boxer briefs while he sheds mine. Buck naked. We move more frenzied, my mouth against his mouth, his strong hand running across the back of my neck, everything sensitive, lit up, and I stifle a groan in my throat. Our bodies dig into each other, skin against skin, intense friction heating us. The cold air no longer bites at me, but his teeth nip my shoulder. My mouth opens, but I cage the raspy sound. Then I reach down and stroke him, his muscles tensing up against me. Jesus. His gravelly noise dies as he grits his teeth. He jacks me off and rubs his thumb over the tip. My shoulders dig deep into the sleeping bag, my head wanting to arch back. Fuck me. Fuck me, fuck me, fuck me. I flex, stopping myself from ejaculating. Not happening yet. I place a hand on his chest and he lets go. I stretch my arm out, patting his sleeping bag for his small duffel. Pharaoh leans over and finds it. He has the lube and condoms in a flash. Setting them beside us, he kisses my jaw, sucks my neck. My breath heavies. I squeeze his bare ass, and fuck. My toes curl as he rakes his teeth across the frame of my shoulder, his warm breath blistering my skin. I'm so worked up I could easily come, but I want this to last way longer. Pharaoh, I breathe. He studies my features even without much light. I think he's honing in on our position. I've let him stay on top for a while, and I'm making no move to switch us yet. Pharaoh runs his fingers affectionately through my hair, and his lips touch my ear. Do you want me inside of you tonight? His rough but erotic voice fists my erection. A groan rumbles my throat, then my muscles contract beneath his strong build. His nose flares, his own scorching arousal hitting him hard. Maximov, he whispers. His hand slowly slides towards my ass. Instantly, I catch his wrist, stopping him. I stiffen in a different way, like someone inside my body yelled fire in a crowded room. It's okay, he breathes, our eyes locked. You know I trust you. It's just... I lick my lips. I can't jump into that spontaneously. I want it, but... The next part I'm about to say, I haven't told him yet. Being vulnerable is like shattering concrete on top of layers and layers of hard metal. I lower my voice to a more hushed whisper. He's so close that he can hear me say, the 2 times I've tried, I was 18, and I got inside my head, and it, well, it fucking hurt, and I didn't let it last long. He cups my jaw. Did he finger you first? No. Pharaoh swallows hard, his features skewing towards pissed. Why wouldn't he? He shakes his head. No. Don't answer. He blows out a breath. Fuck. I care about you, man. He kisses my temple, then my lips, and I'm never going to hurt you pressed powerfully against my mouth. When we break, we're quiet for a beat. Pharaoh breathes. It's not just a trust thing, then. You're nervous? A little bit. A little bit, he repeats, like I'm underscoring the truth.
A lot.
I correct. We'll plan nights for it. It'll be a process to work you up. Because you don't relax easily.
I don't,
I say sarcastically. To have even his fingers inside of me? I need to be not nervous, not tensed, not afraid. And that could take hours or days or weeks. I want to try. With him. Only him. I eye his lips and his piercing. Do you want it? His brows rise like I can't see what's right in front of me. Do I want to thrust my cock inside of you? My breath goes shallow. Yeah. Do you want to fuck me? His mouth brushes my ear. Hard. And badly. I buck up, our pelvises grinding together. A noise catches in Pharaoh's throat. He speaks quietly but rapidly. This can go two ways tonight. One, I stay on top like this, and I'll put your cock inside of me. He's a fucking power bottom. The guy pushes his ass against my dick almost every time we screw, so he'd have no problem doing the grunt work. Or, you take me how you fantasized me taking you. That. My cock responds to that. His flexed muscles do too. I answer by pushing his chest up off mine. I'm aggressive in bed. And every time I manhandle him, he lets out a breathy curse, an erotic fuck and damn. I kneel beside him and tear open a condom, sheathing my erection fast. His breath quickens, stroking his cock while watching me. Fuck me. We're both boiling at the delay. I reposition him, shoving him down on all fours, his knees on the sleeping bags, hands on the pillows. Pharaoh cranes his neck over his shoulder, his mouth parted. He extends his arm behind him, gripping my ribs. I lube his hole, running my finger around the rim. He groans as softly as he can. Fuck. I push two fingers inside, opening him. I replace my fingers with my erection. Slowly, slowly sinking into Pharaoh. Christ, the pressure. I growl with clenched teeth, my eyes on fire. His hand tightens on my ribs. His gaze flitting to mine, and we share this recognition that one day this will be him. He'll be knelt behind my ass, sinking deep, deep into me. I'm all the way in, and I rock forward, hands on his muscular hips. I thrust and thrust. He swings his head forward, drops his hand, needing to grip the ground, somehow. Closer. My body aches for contact. Closer. Closer. I want skin and friction and sweat. I sink further into him, and he drops to his forearms, cursing a dizzying fucking curse. He bucks up into me. Fuck me. My chest welds to his back, a sheen of sweat built on us both. I clutch him stronger, my biceps cut sharp. Yes. Fuck yes. The pressure, the friction, his muscular body and expression. Us this close together. Everything compounds together in a blood-pumping, mind-fucking wave. My ass flexes with each push in. He can barely keep his head hoisted. He's pretty much flat against the sleeping bags. We're about the same size, same build, and my body cloaks his, lying on top, pounding into him. I wrap my forearm around his collarbones, and I dig deep. Fuck. He groans into the sleeping bag. His legs spread wide as I fuck in between them. Pharaoh lifts his head, angling, and his mouth meets mine. Our tongues fight for that ache. My pulse bangs my eardrums. I dig harder. He breaks apart from my mouth to let out a rumbled sound that completely spins my world. Pharaoh buries his head in the sleeping bag, stifling his groans.
38. Pharaoh Keen. Fuck. Fuck. I'm very far gone, choked up with pleasure. Water crests the corner of my eyes. His weight bears on my body. I lie on the floor. He lies on top of me. This is how he wants me to fuck him. Hard and deep and unrelenting, but also protective and sheltered. Fully connected. He grabs onto my forearms, bracing himself so he can drive deeper. Fucking hell. My eyes roll back, my mouth wide open. Maximoff groans my name in the pit of my ear as an orgasm barrels through him. My muscles throb from being flexed. He slows, milking the climax, and I try to catch my breath. When he pulls out, he flips me onto my back, and I clutch his hair while he finishes me off with his mouth. I bite down, my pulse jackhammering. Fuck! I curse as I hit a peak. He swallows the last of my cum, and then we're breathing hard, staring at one another, and my eyes say what blares inside my mind. We'll have more weeks together, months, years. It's not ending here. I'm going to give him what he just gave me. I tug him down, and we end up on our backs, staring at the tent ceiling. I tangle my fingers through his hair, leisurely pushing back the damp strands. He runs his ankle against mine. Crickets are the only sound, and the dark bathes us. Maximoff turns his head to me, and he wears this look that says he's more than content. He's happy.
39. Maximoff Hale. Akara puts his baseball cap on backwards. Mafi, you only have 3 hours until this is all over. Do you have to confront them?
Yes. It's my only answer.
We huddle around the canoe rack by the lake's dock. Not that far away, campgoers break down their tents and pack their bags, getting ready for the final breakfast. Sully and Jane stand on either side of me, our three bodyguards opposing us. Orange leaves crunch beneath our boots.
If you heard what they said, I continue, you'd be pushing me towards them.
Akara doesn't blink.
I doubt that. We're the ones who are supposed to handle this.
He gestures to himself, Pharaoh, and Quinn.
Not you, Pharaoh says for good measure. His gaze set hard on me like, no fucking way in hell are you confronting someone without me, Maximoff.
I get that there's security. I'm the celebrity. But I can't call in reinforcements to fight all of my battles. I can't stand like a voiceless statue.
Neither can Janie. Not in this instance.
You can come with us. Pharaoh can come with us. Christ, bring Quinn too. But as the CEO of this charity, I'm not going to let this campaway end without saying something to them.
Jane nods strongly in agreement.
This morning, Brad, Tyler, and whatever the other three fucking guys are named, they were making lewd gestures about Jane again. Only they mentioned hogtying and fucking her, and I'm proud of the fact that I didn't flip out on them in the moment.
I walked away with Jane. I cooled down. We came up with a plan.
But Akara doesn't see this as progress on my part.
I'm joining him, Jane reminds our bodyguards. I need to say something too. There are hundreds of girls here, and if those guys leave thinking it's okay to say things like that, then we failed. We can't stay silent.
Sully stretches her arm behind me to hold Janie's hand.
If you need me, I'm there.
Thank you.
Jane breaks from my side, and the two girls share a long hug. And? I ask Pharaoh. He lays easygoing eyes on me, probably because I said the magic words, come with me.
I think that you're not going to change your mind.
Yep. He turns to Akara.
If we approach them together, it'll seem like an attack.
Akara considers the options.
Those guys like you.
Pharaoh rolls his eyes, but nods.
You go with Jane and Maximoff.
He leaves out Sully. I'm guessing he doesn't want her near this altercation. Akara looks at me.
Don't get into a fist fight.
To Pharaoh, he says, don't let him.
I won't.
Akara emphasizes his point to me.
You've done good work here, Muffy. You throw a punch and that's all the media will talk about. Not the success, not the money you made. Please, just stay calm while you talk to them. If you can't do that, then let Pharaoh, Quinn, and me handle it ourselves.
I'll be calm. Pharaoh tries not to smile.
What does that look like?
We're about to find out. I look to Janie, who hoists her head high, shoulders pulled back, standing tall, like the woman who raised her. And I don't need to ask if she's ready. Let's go kick some ass. Civilly. We gather Brad and his four friends by the row of log cabins that Camp Calloway uses for summer camps. Some people linger close to watch the interaction. There's no privacy, but if we brought them into the camp's office, I'm afraid I'd let my anger best me. Janie speaks first.
I've heard all the things you've been saying about me in particular these past few days.
She adjusts the strap of a pumpkin-shaped purse that slips down her shoulder.
That's not how you should speak about another human being. Period.
Brad scratches his blonde hair by the temples, smirking.
So, you wouldn't want to be hogtied then?
His friends laugh. Pharaoh has a hand on my shoulder, and his fingers dig into my muscle. Rage bangs at my chest. My arms stay crossed. I don't move.
No,
Jane refutes.
And that's not something you should be asking. It's not kind, it's not appropriate. If you did that to another girl...
Whoa, Brad holds up his hands. I'd never say that to another chick. But you ask for it. You're always talking about BDSM on that show. I mean, you're inviting this shit. It's your fault. She talks about how she's not into BDSM, I snap, because guys like you can't seem to understand that she's not her mom. Jane adds,
and you guys don't seem to understand the meaning of consent. Even if I enjoyed BDSM like my mom, you shouldn't be speaking to me or her like that. Don't be a vile person. Is it that dreadfully difficult for you? Did she just compare herself to her mom?
Tyler laughs to Brad. Brad chuckles. I've seen Rose Calloway's sex tapes, and he motions to Jane's body. That's a cheap imitation. Fuck them. Jane almost steps forward, but Pharaoh rests a hand on her shoulder now.
How is he not ready to swing?
My blood is boiling, my biceps flexed, hands in fists. I swallow 1,000 times to try and remind myself, do not fight them. Do not move. It solves nothing. Pharaoh keeps his voice even keeled and asks,
what's the point of saying that? They're all telling you it's hurtful. Listen.
Tyler nods to Jane.
Get thicker skin.
Fuck you, I growl. You're a guest here. Brad smirks, but his tone changes, hostility mounting.
No, we won a raffle that we paid for.
I grind my teeth. Calm. Be calm. I breathe out before I ask calmly,
why even enter the raffle if you hate us? Why come here and take the opportunity away from other people who would have loved to be where you are?
Brad extends his arms.
Free camping trip.
I have no words. Full disclosure, I don't understand them. I can't relate. I can't empathize. I don't know if it's because I stand on a platform, a pedestal too high to see from their perspective. I don't know if it's because as I try to jump down into their shoes, I'm just flooded with rage. My gaze daggers, burning and churning, and my face is all blades, all sharp, brutal edges. Tyler snickers.
Did you all really just pull us aside to lecture us?
Brad snorts.
They did.
He smacks his friend's chest and they chuckle again. Tyler shakes his head.
It's almost like they think they're so much better than us. The entitlement that you two have is honestly disgusting.
In my peripheral, I notice people filming the interaction, phones whipping out and pointed at us. This has traveled in a direction I never thought it'd actually go. Sometimes I can't predict what people will think, what the public thinks. Where's Jack Hyland when you need him? Jane raises her chin.
We just believe that you should be kinder. Don't tell a girl that she should be hogtied, even if it's someone you see on TV. Even if they say they like it, they're not saying they want to be hogtied by you.
She takes a deep breath.
If you consider that entitled, then... okay, I'm sorry.
Don't fucking apologize, I tell her. They've been beating her down for 3 days. I'm not going to let that stand.
Oh, Brad says. We've struck a chord.
I growl. You've struck nothing, asshole.
Maximoff.
Pharaoh warns in the pit of my ear. I point at these guys.
I sincerely hope that you don't ever talk to women like that in your everyday life, I growl.
Fuck it, you shouldn't talk to anyone like that. And if you can't see right from wrong, then remove your heads from your asses. As soon as the words escape my mouth, phones buzz and chime and ring all around us. People whisper, casting glances our direction. Even my cell vibrates madly in my pocket. It's like someone flipped a switch and shrouded us in darkness. What the fuck is going on? Eyes begin to zero in on Janie and me, like we've just undressed in the middle of the field, naked, bare. My pulse speeds. Brad practically cackles, glancing from his phone, then to me, back to his phone, then to me.
No wonder you're so defensive of Jane Cobalt, he says. You're fucking her.
I lunge.
Nope.
Pharaoh grabs me around the waist. I'm all boiling wrath. I point at Brad. My feet dragging in the dirt as Pharaoh restrains me.
You're a piece of shit, I sneer. You think I'm a piece of shit?
He laughs.
Dude, I'm not fucking my cousin.
I'm not fucking her, I scream, my lungs on fire.
Mafi,
Jane says in warning, her voice trailing ominously. She's staring haunted at her phone. What the fuck happened?
40. Maximoff Hale.
Jane, Pharaoh, and I only have about 10 minutes to talk before my parents, her parents, and our aunt and uncle show up at the camp. All 6 of them drove over as soon as they saw the article. Maximoff Hale and Jane Cobalt, the secret love affair. It's fake. You shouldn't believe it either. Fake articles always pop up online. We process, we put out a public statement, and we deal with it. This isn't any different as far as I'm concerned. All right, it's a little damn different. I've never been accused of incest. Never even thought that could be swung my way, but as soon as we tell our side of the story, everything will be as it was.
They're waiting in there for us?
Janie asks an alpha bodyguard who exits a camp cabin named Green Willow. He nods tensely, face stoic. I climb up the short stairs with Jane and we pause on the porch. Everything's fine, I remind her. We'll deal with it like we always do. My publicist is on speed dial, and I'm sure your dad wants us to coordinate with his people. Damage control. We're all seasoned pros. Jane inhales a tight breath and nods reassuringly. I glance back. Pharaoh has one foot on the step and looks between us.
If you two need anything, I'll be right here.
Chatter in his earpiece distracts him. His jaw ticks before he touches his mic on his collar. I can't distinguish his hushed words. I move forward, grabbing Jane's hand. Right when Jane and I enter the cabin, hand in hand, the energy shifts. Our parents and aunt and uncle grow eerily quiet all of a sudden. We take seats on 2 wooden chairs, facing a wall of bunks and some of the people we love most in our lives. The 6 people who have influenced us, raised us, who shaped us, and protected us. On a top bunk bed, Uncle Reich sits beside his wife, my Aunt Daisy, the owner of Camp Calloway and Sully's mom, blonde hair chopped unevenly and a long scar down her cheek. She swings her legs over the side of the bunk, and her bright eyes flit to Reich's darkened ones. He looks pissed, but I don't know, that's his usual expression. Below him, on the ground, my mom rests on a black trunk, plastic baggie of trail mix on her lap. She shoves a handful in her mouth. Nervous. She's nervous. My mom tugs at my dad's crew neck shirt, like she wants him to sit, too. He shakes his head, leaning against the post of another bunk bed, arms crossed, eyes daggered. I look to Jane's parents. Uncle Connor and Aunt Rose stand, all-powerful, side by side, hand in hand, armored for battle like a king and queen. Only I can't tell who they prepare to fight. I glance at each of them again, about how they position 2 chairs for us to face them. Is this an interrogation? I'm glad all of you are here, I say, giving them the benefit of the doubt. We should talk about how to deal with the article. I pause when they remain quiet. My mom shoots her sister Rose a cagey look. Jesus. Reich is staring hard at my hand and Jane's. Jane shakes her hand out of mine. What? I whip my head to each of them, not able to glare at all 6 fast enough. It's false. Christ, I shouldn't even have to say that. Connor takes the reins.
We just have some questions.
Jane's dad is the voice of reason. He'll be the first one to understand. Everyone else is dramatic, but still, how the fuck could they believe this, even for a second? Or maybe they don't believe it. Maybe their doubt is just my paranoia leaking into common sense. They're family. They'd never combat us. Jane straightens, her chair creaking.
What kind of questions?
Nous avons besoin d'explications, mon cœur.
We need explanations, my heart.
No French, my dad tells him.
Rose speaks, voice icy.
We all need to be on the same page. We can't let this divide us.
Her piercing yellow-green eyes drill holes into pretty much everyone, even her husband. That's what we want, I say. My shoulders squared. I'm ready to resolve this and move on.
Good. Connor nods. Let's start with the night the cats escaped. Why were you in your underwear?
Why the fuck would that need clarification? We were playing a drinking game. Jane adds,
sober participants had to strip instead of take a sip.
and we were using your rules. My gaze swings up to Uncle Reich. Reich rocks back like I sucker punched him.
My rules? No fucking way. You can thank Cobalt for that one.
I grimace at Uncle Connor. You came up with the stripping rule? He's the polished one. And he drinks. I always thought it had to be either my dad or Reich.
We're one question in, and this is already being derailed, he says. And yes, I did. Back to that same night.
Hallow Friends Eve, Lily clarifies.
Such a cute name.
Her little sister Daisy smiles.
You're only saying that because your daughter coined it,
Rose rebuts. Daisy mock gasps. Connor ignores the sisters and he asks me point blank,
why did you have bite marks?
My mom's eyes dart to Jane. I start shaking my head. No, she can't actually believe that Jane is the one who bit me. Aunt Daisy eyes us both. So does Aunt Rose. I blink slowly like my world is starting to spin, and I'm gripping hard to hang on. My dad's jaw sharpens with each passing beat. New, uncomfortable tension vacuums the air from the cabin. I sense the shift again. I sense the unease. I crack my knuckles, my back achingly straight. How much do you guys not believe us? Pressure packs on my chest. You're not just asking these questions for publicists. You're asking for yourselves, aren't you? Jane's hand returns to mine, and our fingers intertwine. They're all watching with suspicion. It knives my ribcage.
Before we make a decision, we need to hear your side of things, my dad tells me.
I disentangle my fingers from Jane, not able to sit any longer. I stand as tall as my dad, glowering.
You honestly believe I could be having sex with Jane?
I don't know what to think, Muffy.
His eyes flash hot.
It's incest, for Christ's sake. That's not something you'd come to me and talk about.
I'm your son. I motion angrily at him. You know me. You know me better than most people ever will. How could you even think? My words stick to the back of my raw throat. He doesn't even look sympathetic. He's still on guard, like I'm straight up lying to his face. I want to scream at the top of my goddamn lungs. I'm not fucking Jane. But I can't even unleash the words. The wind is knocked out of my chest. Stunned in the face of their doubt. Jane's mom takes over.
When I was your age, I thought I knew my sister, but for years Lily hid her sex addiction from me,
Rose tells me.
She was lying. She was sneaking around. I missed every sign.
I hear the guilt in her voice. She wishes she'd been there for my mom earlier, and she thinks I'm lying like my mom. Fuck. I run my hands through my hair and growl. I'm not an addict. We're not lying. But their experiences shaped them. They've shaped us. And how many times did my parents tell Rose, Connor, Reich, and Daisy we're not lying? How many times were they caught in one? God damn it.
We're not lying,
Jane says more clearly, less hostile.
I promise we're not.
I nod over and over and fucking over.
It's fucking incest, Moff,
Reich says, his rough voice strained.
Like your dad says, it's not something you're going to willingly admit.
So then what? I question. You want to catch us in a lie until we're forced to admit it? Is that the goal here? They don't say anything. Jesus, I murmur.
Here.
My mom gets up, watery eyes.
Have some trail mix.
I glare. I don't want your trail mix, Mom. Instantly, I feel like an asshole. I don't think I've ever snapped at my mom in my life. She sinks back onto the trunk, her chin quivering. She sniffs and tries to raise her chin.
I'll take some trail mix, love.
My dad snatches her bag.
Dad,
Jane says, her voice soft and wary.
We are telling the truth.
Connor barely blinks.
I have to stick with the facts. He pauses. And I want you two to realize the health risks if...
Stop.
Rose covers his mouth with her hand. My mom bursts into tears. Aunt Daisy wipes her eyes with the edge of her shirt.
Fucking A, Cobalt,
Reich growls. My dad looks sick. We're not having sex, I yell, veins almost protruding in my neck. I set my hands on my head, breathing hard. Pharaoh. I almost turn to my right, expecting him to be there. He's always next to me, but he's outside the closed door, listening to my frustration and fury. Reich points to me.
Explain the fucking bite marks.
It wasn't me,
Jane says, still sitting, but confidence and power boosts her words. The truth. It's the goddamn truth.
Then who the fuck was it?
Reich asks me. Shit. 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 Jane, Pharaoh, and I already talked about the secret, the real one, where I'm sleeping with my bodyguard. Jane said,
I'm not going to be the reason you two go public.
She was adamant that we not expose our secret to the world. She's intelligent and calculated, and she told me,
there's no certainty the media will even believe you and Pharaoh were dating. They'll most likely say it's a ploy to hide our supposed love affair. The timing is suspicious. And then what, Mafi? Pharaoh loses his job and his privacy. You get a new bodyguard. And everyone will still believe we're having sex.
There's no evidence of Pharaoh and I hooking up. We have no texts to leak. No email thread. No photos from the past. No video footage. Us being so damn careful. I never thought that'd work against us. Compare that load of nothing to the countless photographs and evidence of Jane and me together. All the times we've hugged. Where we've kissed each other's cheeks. My arms wrapped around her shoulders, her head on my chest. We're close. We've always been close, but now every photograph can be twisted. Add in the hours of We Are Calloway footage where we both talk about how much we love each other. Platonic love, but that can be distorted too. Even the Hallow Friends Eve is now packaged as evidence. Media posted the photo of me cradling Jane in my arms. I'm practically naked. She's in her pajamas. They say it's too close for cousins. For the first time in my life, I feel isolated, alone, like Jane and I have boarded a lifeboat and been pushed out into a swelling ocean.
Maximoff,
Reich forces.
Who bit you?
I prepared myself to deal with tabloids, the world, not my family. And while you may think the world would be a worse battle, it's not. This is worse. This is gut-wrenching. Not Jane, I say strongly. The bite marks can't be from a one-night stand, though, my dad says. I frown, wondering how they would have drawn that conclusion. Reich tells me,
you haven't been going to clubs for 4 fucking months. I called Price asking for the NDAs and he doesn't have any.
Which means that you haven't had any one-night stands, Connor continues, or any random hookups. Do you follow the logic, Murphy?
I remember the lie Pharaoh told the security team. You think I'm seeing one girl?
Price told me,
Reich says. Price. I shake my head repeatedly.
He said you've been sleeping with the same girl and you refused to get an NDA because she's not someone your parents would fucking approve of.
They all looked at Jane. Damn it.
It's not me,
Jane says stiffly.
My dad gestures to my chest. Who else would we not approve of? I can't think of one goddamn name other than your cousin.
Pharaoh Redford Keene. I stare off, haunted. Morality is a demanding beast that asks me, pleads with me, begs me to do the right thing. What's right anymore? I'm searching for the sword that I need to fall on. I just don't want to hurt Jane or Pharaoh in the process. I can't hurt him. I can't. Just let it slice through me.
Maybe it's not a love affair,
Reich says.
Are you drinking? Are you having any fucking problems?
No. I say firmly.
Are you?
Reich turns to Jane.
No,
she says adamantly.
We just want to help.
My mom chimes in, wet tears streaking her cheeks.
If you both would be honest, we can all work this out.
They think we're lying. And I am lying. The truth is standing just outside the door. And I remember what Pharaoh once said.
You just need to know that I'm going to get banged up, and you can't run and save me, Wolf Scout. You have to let it happen. I'm not supposed to protect him. As much as it's killing me, as much as it's driving knots in my damn stomach, we're supposed to stand side by side, and we need to take this hit together. Go get the truth. I turn my head.
Do you sleep in the same bed together?
My dad asks, voice stilted. I go rigid. The room grows hot. My head swerves back to him. I'm not burying myself beneath another lie. Sometimes, I say, it's always platonic. My mom sits on the very edge of the trunk.
But you sleep in the same bed,
she says as though she needs extra confirmation, like she didn't hear right. Yeah. My mom touches her chest with two hands.
Your dad and I, We used to sleep in the same bed when we were just friends.
Oh, shit.
I licked my dry lips. You were attracted to each other. I'm not attracted to Jane.
Likewise,
Jane says, shifting in her chair.
I'm not attracted to Moffy.
We were also liars,
my dad tells me. Right now, I am a liar, too. They spot it like blood in the water. They're sharks, I'm prey. And I'm being ripped open. My dad keeps eye contact with me, looking broken and pained.
We love you, he tells me. We'd love you no matter what, but we can't help you unless you're honest with us.
I don't need help, I tell him. I'm fine. He nods.
I've said that one before.
His words practically ice. He gives me his classic bitter smile.
Congratulations, Maximoff. You got what you wanted. You're more like me.
His disappointment is a tsunami crashing through my chest. I stare at my dad, right in the eyes, and I say the words that I've never wanted to utter in my damn life. It takes every ounce of power inside of me to admit this to myself and to him and to the room, and even to you. And I tell my dad, I'm not like you. I would never hurt people I love with a lie. And that's what's happening now. I'm hurting him, my mom, aunts and uncles, and even Jane. I can handle the world's doubt. That's commonplace. But I can't live with theirs. Go get the truth. I turn to the door, and I suddenly freeze. Pharaoh approaches me, already inside the cabin. His lips rise like, I know.
41. Pharaoh Keen. I heard everything from outside, and about midway through I knew what I needed to do. I feel six incredulous, confused gazes sweep my sudden presence. I don't confront them yet. Before Maximoff repeatedly asks, "Are you sure you want to do this?" I catch his wrist, standing right by his side. Very softly, I whisper, "Your morality is rubbing off on me." I feel sick putting Maximoff Hale in a place where he'd be forced to lie to these people. His family, who need him, who trust him, who love him. He'd be a worse man if he trampled all over them with a lie, and he's made me a better one because I don't even hesitate to unleash the truth. I don't care about the career consequences, and we're strong enough to survive the blowback. At the end of the road, all I know is that I'm protecting and preserving the very essence of who he is. And I do it 500 times over. I nod to Maximoff to go ahead. Tell them. He fists my shirt and tugs me to his chest. In a swift, pulse-pounding moment, he has two firm hands on my neck, and his mouth meets mine. Not wavering, not second-guessing. His pride for this and for us lifts his carriage like he's skyscraping tall. He has to feel my lips rising. I can't restrain a smile. I wouldn't, even if I was ordered to. Our bodies pull together in a deeper, slower kiss, and I hook my arm around his broad shoulders. His hand slides through my black hair, his desire and hunger urging my mouth open again, pulsating my veins and heart. All things I've felt with Maximoff before. He went all in. All in with me. I recognize, like everyone else has to, this is his first kiss with an audience. If they don't believe him now, then they're just in denial. When we finally break the kiss, we exchange one headstrong, stubborn-as-hell look that says, "We're in this shit together, and we're going to get out together, no matter what." We confront his stunned family side by side, my arm wrapped around his lower back. "There's the truth," Maximoff says. "And I'm not fucking lying." His overprotective dad stakes an icy glare into me, and only me. "Either you're the best goddamn bodyguard and you're protecting him with a cover-up, or you're the shittiest bodyguard and you're sleeping with my son." I don't miss a beat. "I'm sleeping with your son." Lo seethes, his gaze butchering me. I expected that one, but all the respect and trust I'd built and earned with him throughout the years just rips right out of my body. He rotates to his brother. Reich jumps down from the top bunk before his wife can catch his shoulder. Maximoff points angrily at them. "Pharaoh isn't the enemy. He's my fucking boyfriend." I try not to smile. Damn, that felt good to hear. Connor Cobalt commands the floor with one step forward. "Let's clear the air before the overreacting begins." He raises a calming hand towards Maximoff and me. "We believe you're together, but the world won't. Not now. The media will run with the Moffy Jane love affair story." It's more salacious. Setting that aside, Connor says, we now need to deal with the private security issue of a bodyguard having sex with a client. My son! Lowe sneers at Connor.